The 25-year mark has passed, so I guess I can tell you the two video game ideas I had during my very short time in the video game industry. They are totally yours to have. Do with them as you wish, and good luck. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to William Hearn, Daniel Boyd, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. When I was working at Cygnosis from 1995 to 1996, I was never going to have a game idea go anywhere. Cygnosis was a UK company. The US section tried to have games be made, but other than a few add-ons to Lemmings, nothing ever came of it. So there was no way somebody working in tech support for DOS machines was going to have any influence whatsoever in Liverpool. But when Cygnosis shut down and I found myself the art director for a startup called Focus Studios, made of a few ex-Cygnosis employees, there was the slightest hint of a chance that I might have a game idea come to life. In those early days of Focus Studios, a studio, I might add, that only lasted about a year and change, we were doing a few paid jobs here and there with the intention of eventually proposing a game that would be picked up by a publisher. To do that, we would need some sort of advance money, and then we would be able to work on it and hit certain milestones. For some people, this is all very basic knowledge, but that's how it was working in the 1990s. You got yourself someplace that would say they would take it later, and that would pay to keep the lights on and keep your employees fed and be able to make the actual game. For this reason, we had a number of people with game ideas that they were working on, the most prominent being Mark, the head of the company, who wanted a space travel and interaction game that would allow people to drive extremely fast through a grid landscape. But we could all submit ideas, and I had a couple that I cooked up and provided to him, and the company went under before anything could be done with them, and so they have lain dormant. Making games is not overly enjoyable. You have to spend an enormous amount of time coming up with something that feels balanced, only to provide it to playtesters who smash it to bits in front of you, and then even with a really well-made, really good game, you might not get the traction, attention, or the ability to make it pay for itself, and you find yourself out of a job. It is incredibly difficult and unpleasant. I could not recommend going into games for anyone. If you do, good luck and enjoy yourself, but don't think that it is a good life. But every person who starts out in games needs that ignorance of not being worried about where the money's going to come from or if people are going to want to play the game. You just have your idea and you want to go forward with it. Here then are my two game ideas that I submitted to Focus Studios. The first one was called Central Plumbing Unit, and it was a game that involved water physics. The idea was that instead of electricity powering things, we lived in a world where people had used water wheels and then just made them more and more complicated until they were able to miniaturize and run computers using water. So anywhere we had gates and logic and programming for electronics, we instead were using water. The idea of this was that you were being trained as a student to understand this plumbing-based computing technology, and so you were being given small devices that would push out water vaguely realistically, and then adding water wheel and other sorts of culverts into the water, you could solve puzzles, do math, and in general hit some sort of goal to go on to the next level. So initially you would just need to move a bucket underneath a spigot of water, and that was a level finished, followed by being able to move around an obstacle until in the end you're doing some sort of massive water wheel contraption that is sending all sorts of liquid particles in every direction. The whole thing looks completely beyond belief, but ultimately you do become an expert in central plumbing units. This turns out to be part of a genre that has actually grown and matured and can be found on both phone games and regular Steam and GOG games, which is the puzzle game that gives you things to affect the logic of a flow. Everything from Rocky's boots all the way to Incredible Machine and beyond. This actually already exists. Not everybody is using water or particles, but they'll use electricity or connecting links. But having an alternate view of the world where everything is based off of some bizarre other world version of electronic engineering, I don't think anybody did that. So if you want, feel free, make Central Plumbing Unit. You can do whatever you want with it. You have my full permission, license. Go ahead, make of it what you will. The second game was called Ante Meridian, The Morning of the World, and it was going to be a quasi role-playing but primarily physics-based game where the world has a number of suns and moons, and due to a once every thousand years occasion, there was going to be one night of darkness. That's actually an Isaac Asimov science fiction story, but I was placing it in more of a bizarre medieval world based on a Michelangelo-like outlook, where you are a junior member of scientists who are dressed as wizards for some reason, and they know that the world is going to plunge into panic and misery. And what you are being asked to do is to manipulate mirrors and reflective surfaces so that even though the whole world will seem to be plunged into darkness, we can show that light will survive the day and the population will not panic. The idea is that you are flying some sort of version of various Michelangelo machines, and that the general aesthetic of the whole game is based around a world in which the Michelangelo approach to architecture and machinery is the one that became dominant. In that way, that look of flying buttresses and beautiful inlaid wood was still the look of the world. And so you were flying through this architecture to make this world light up through the darkness. I've seen variations of this mechanic in some ways. Some of the Zelda games have the ability to move light around mirrors to hit switches. I was looking for something along that line. I liked the idea of people having a kind of arcade feel to it where you are moving things based on time limits, and I definitely wanted it to be inherently beautiful. Beautiful in a way that mist was beautiful, or beautiful in a way that we were looking at really well-rendered 3D objects that would look fantastic. Since I was interested in doing this in around 1996, I had a lot going against me, even if Focus Studios had decided to move in that direction. Thematically, I loved the idea of a world that was plunged into ignorance and sadness, and that taking action and doing some sort of science-based or at least light and physics-based work would make the world better. I liked the idea that the puzzles you were solving were meant to literally enlighten, to save the world via illumination. Thematically, I wanted to see where that would go. Would you have a second group of people whose interests were in having the whole world plunge into darkness in that night? Would they be undoing the work you would do? I liked the idea of filming cutscenes. Again, this is 1996, with people dressed up in all sorts of different costumes and having them read from scripts. This is all before this falls out of favor. The idea that you are joining some sort of hybrid world that Sierra might make, where you are going to be the one true savior of things that have gone wrong. This is a theme you see in all sorts of games at the time. I wanted, more than anything else, for this game to build a world where thinking, logic, and taking a selfless act was the road to victory. So those are my two beautiful ideas, which have sat dormant for a quarter of a century. But that's not just what I'm talking about here. If you sit a lot of people down and talk to them about if they've ever had the idea for a video game, they may, in fact, be able to recount to you their own complicated story that they've come up with, or a world that they would love to see portrayed online or in a game. And, yeah, many of them will be derivative. There are some pretty basic things that controllers and arcades have made us think that video games can do. We tend to have a lot of very special shooty people running down a first-person hallway. We will sometimes see that a game that we had an idea for did come out and sank without a trace 5 or 10 years ago. There's other games where the desire to remake them over and over again just comes out because the game ideas are, in their own way, timeless, and the technology has nothing to do with the joy or lack of joy in playing the game. Frankly, I hope we keep remaking Myst forever, remaking Crazy Taxi, or Jet Set Radio, or Lemmings, or a whole other range of classic games. I hope we do them again and again to the end of time, because fundamentally, their mechanics are really, really fun. If I was to go pick up my phone and go look for games that are similar to ideas I've had, I'm sure I'll find them. Totally made, totally worked on for anywhere for a few months or a few years, and up for sale. I'm sure if somebody out there immediately thinks of a game I'm describing, feel free to let me know. But it's important for me to make clear that I definitely believe that ideas are just ideas until you act on them. It's only when you actually start to turn your idea into a reality that it grows and it shifts into something that's going to survive and not just exist. I am sure that the longer I had worked on Central Plumbing Unit or Anti-Meridian, I would have discovered all sorts of problems with the design or the approach or what the machines could do. I would have been paired up with one or two programmers, and as we started to work out different mechanics, we would have discovered that things were fun or not fun. My boss, Mark, was an incredible games player. I used to call him the alien. We would get our hands on a new PlayStation game, and within a day or two, he was a scary, scary expert at it. With a small time shift, he probably could have been a world-famous esports competitor with the ability that he had to improvise, learn new control schemes, and adapt. So even as we were working on ideas to promote to publishers for possible investment, Mark was constantly refining his own work and finding flaws in it and coming up with improvements. My games would have gone through the same thing. Maybe you wouldn't be able to draw water a certain way, or maybe you'd have to shore up how water was portrayed because otherwise it would be impossible for the CPU to keep up or for players to understand what needed to happen. Maybe you would add a new mechanic along the way and make the water different colors, or make it that something absorbed all the water around it, which would change the nature of what you could do in later levels. I'm not sure. Never had a chance to go through that multi-month iteration and figure out where things were going to go. But I do know that right now there are thousands of people, either as a full-time job and losing money every day, or as a side hobby that they do on the weekends, they are doing this. They are working on games and programs and trying to figure out how to make them more fun, how to make them more responsive, and to understand what is going to sell to a constantly shifting market. It's exciting to me to see someone like Christine Love, whose work I've followed for years and years, as she tries to figure out how her current game is going to play out. She's working on a game called Get in the Car, Loser, which is a four-person RPG based around a road trip. And just watching her deal with all of the mechanics of a RPG game and having battles be properly weighed and constantly testing graphics routines and transitions, it is hard, hard work. It's something that can consume every moment of your life. I believe strongly that Christine will finish that game, but I'm sure the minute she's finished, she's never going to want to touch that genre ever again. There's a game out there whose idea fills my heart with joy. It's a game about a cat that lives in Kowloon City, and it's being done by a group called HK Project, and they've been working on it for at least 4 or 5 years. I have no idea what the state of it is, or how far they've gotten, or anything else. All I know is that I've seen one or two tiny examples of gameplay, and I am in love with it. Kowloon City was a city that lived outside of Hong Kong that was completely and utterly unregulated. It was a small outpost outside of Hong Kong that in the 60s and 70s exploded in population, went up a dozen stories, and became a maze of unregulated businesses, government officials living there illegally, and lots of different warring gangs. There's footage of this world, and it is as horrible and breathtaking as you can imagine. It was all demolished as part of a government cleanup program a good number of years ago, so there's no trace of it anymore. But the romantic idea of this city, this cyberpunk experience that lived on the Earth for 30 or 40 years, is a perfect place for a video game. I have no idea how the final game is going to be. The game I play in my imagination is probably going to be very, very hard to top. I strongly suggest that everyone listening create a game. Not necessarily a game that gets finished or can be played on a real computer, but just to let your mind go and dream of a world and what you would want to see in it and what those little parts and pieces would interlock as. Come up with a world or a mechanic or an idea. Don't even look up to see if it's been made before. Who cares? Just think to yourself, what game would I love to play right now that I'm not sure exists? And invent it. The mental gymnastics needed, the thinking about what others will have to do, the idea that you could do anything you wanted to in this world, and what would make it fun, and would it need a score? This is a glorious, beautiful, creative exercise. I can't suggest it enough. When I was 25 and working at Focus Studios, even though it was all going to fall apart in no time at all, that moment when I was sitting in that cubicle thinking, my job involves inventing a game, that was a high point. For at least a while, I could dream that I was going to tell an interactive story and make a world that others would have to live in. It just seemed like I was living the best life in the world, and it would never get better than that. And spoiler alert, it absolutely did. This is Jason Scott, Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bequianu, Forrest Fuqua, Mark Pilgrim, Scott Roseanne, Scott McGrady, and Joshua Stein, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Dream often, dream big, and try to be the Antimeridian of your world.